It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the Gableman investigation is over. Did we learn anything? We'll look at the outcome of the long-running election probe and what ended it. First, credit card debt in the United States rose sharply in the second quarter of this year. According to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, this last year saw the biggest jump in the rate of credit card debt that we've seen in more than 20 years. New York Fed researchers say higher prices and inflation are part of the story, and rising interest rates could accelerate the growth of that debt. Today, we're getting some financial advice on how to pay down credit card debt and avoid building it up in the first place. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about dealing with credit card debt? Have you found yourself putting more expenses on credit cards, maybe as prices have gone up? Have your spending habits changed because of higher prices and inflation? Did you at some point in your life decide you need to get credit cards under control? What changes did you make? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Laura Reinholz is an instructor of practice at Marquette University's College of Business Administration, where she created and teaches the class Foundations of Personal Finance. She's been working in the financial services field for 10 years. Laura, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon.
What are some of the common reasons somebody might end up building up, you know, more credit card debt than they'd like to have?
Well, people build up credit card debt a lot of times because they're either not paying attention to what's going on or because something unexpected has happened. Perhaps unexpected medical bills, for instance.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's kind of a stealth credit creep going on, like if you always use your credit card to, say, fill up the gas tank or make regular purchases and those things go up and you keep doing it without really registering it, it seems like that could really sneak up on your monthly credit card bill.
Oh, absolutely. Years ago, when you went to McDonald's or any fast food restaurant, you would pay cash, right? Because they would not accept credit cards. One of the reasons that they started accepting credit cards is that people don't always pay attention to how much their actual bill is going to be at the end of the month because everything's all put in there together. So really paying attention to what we're spending our money on is going to be very important. And being cognizant that, yes, every time I'm filling up the gas tank, it's going to be a little bit more because of inflation. That certainly is something that we do need to consider.
Now, on a deeper level, what kind of things can we ask ourselves, I guess, about our money habits that that might solve some of these credit card problems down the road? What do we need to analyze in our money and credit behavior?
Okay, how much time do we have? Well, first of all, we have to think back to where we are. First of all, where are we right now? If we took a snapshot, how much money do we have in different accounts and how much money do we owe to different entities? So if I have money in the bank, how much do I actually have in my checking account, in my savings account? Do I have other assets available? And then what kind of debt do I have? Do I have credit cards? Do I have store cards? Do I have student loans? Do I have a car loan? Do I have a mortgage? What I really need to do is do an analysis and figure out how much do I owe for everything and what's the interest rate that I'm paying on these so I can have a strategy. But even going back further than this, we have to think about what was it like when we grew up? Did we talk about money at home? Did we spend money to make ourselves feel better? If we think back to our background and our experiences and our education, that can help us figure out why we're doing some of the things that we're doing now. And we might say, this is a good thing. Or you might say, oh my goodness, you know, this is what it was like growing up. I wanted be somewhere different. So we need to figure out where we are from a financial standpoint and also from a behavioral standpoint in order to determine what kind of steps we can take going forward. And then we need a plan as well.
And I think a lot of people might have an experience where you don't talk about money issues with people and maybe you don't even talk about them that much with your spouse, or gosh, it seems complicated and scary. I don't even want to think about the money stuff. How can we overcome some of those hesitations in the first place?
That's a really good question. How do we overcome some of the discussions about money? First of all, just educate ourselves. And that could be something as simple as doing some Google searches and using some of the good, pay attention to those sites you're going to, but pay attention to some of the information you can find online and learn about different things. Do a little bit of research and find out what different kind of credit cards are available. What are some things I should be looking for in a credit card? What are some pitfalls that I need to pay attention to? And there's some really good websites out there. One is bankrate.com, and you can analyze different kinds of cards for that one. If you want to learn about some different financial things, you can go to finance.yahoo.com. Those are just a couple basic ones. If you want to do more, just dig a little bit deeper and look at things like the Wall Street Journal. So if there are a lot of different resources that you can either subscribe to, or you can probably also get at your local library as well.
We are talking about credit card debt with Laura Reinholz with Marquette University's College of Business Administration. She teaches a class, created the class called Foundations of Personal Finance. You can join in with your experiences, your questions, 800-642-1234. Are you one of the apparently many Americans who saw credit card debt creeping up earlier this year? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on a caller now. Jack is with us in Madison. Jack, hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. So I've been out of the country since I was like 18. And upon coming back, I wanted to get a credit card, but the bank won't let me get one because essentially I've been off the grid. And I was just wondering what my credit score would be. I don't have any debt. I really had no bills in the U.S. I've been kind of off the grid. I'm wondering if my credit score would be zero or what number it would fall on.
And Jack,
that's my question.
I should ask just to get a time scale. You said since you were 18, about how many years has that been?
About 6 years.
Okay. Jack, thanks a lot for that call. A unique situation, maybe, Laura, but Jack is apparently invisible in some ways to credit card companies he wants to get a card from.
And that is a really challenging thing. Jack, you are right along with other people who choose to not use any kind of credit, and they're not going to have a good credit score either. So some different things you can do. If you're back in the States right now?
He hung up,
We'll assume
he is back here and trying to get this rolling. Yeah. Okay.
If he's back in the States, he can start trying to get some different types of credit. First of all, if he's paying an electric bill, that is one thing that will show up on a credit report. And then he can try to pull up some other things as well. Having different types of entities will allow him to build a credit score. I'm not going to say that his credit score is going to be zero. They actually don't go down to zero. But in order to have a good credit report, you need to actually have some credit, kind of like you need experience to get the job, but you need the experience to get the job. One of those things. But there are a couple of resources that are available for you to look at, for anybody who wants to look at what their credit score is or their credit report. One is myfico.com, M-Y-F-I-C-O, for myfairisaac.com. You can look at what goes into creating the credit score, because scores can go from, I think it's three, I'm not 100% certain on the bottom, but about 350 up to about 850 points. And you want to be well above 700, probably 720 up to 850 to get the best rate for any kind of loan or credit card. If your rate is a little bit lower, if your number is going to be lower, then your rate is going to be higher and it's going to cost you more money. So myfico.com can educate you with different things, and you can also see what your score is going to be. Of course, you can also buy into certain things, but there's a lot of free information there. The other resource that's really important and is also a free resource is annualcreditreport.com. I'll say it again, annualcreditreport.com. And this is where you can check what kind of history you have for your own credit. And you'll see a green light, a yellow light, or a red light based on if you're doing the right thing or if you've had some late payments. And if there are any errors, of course, you can try to get those taken care of as well. That is a truly free resource sponsored by the federal government. And you can get your credit report from Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And you can do each one of those at least once per year. So you can check up to see how things are in order to make sure that your credit score is going to be what you want it to be. But being out of the country, not having the history, makes it a little bit challenging to start with that high credit score. You're going to have to build it up just by taking some actions.
Thanks for that call and good luck. Rebecca is with us now in Madison. Rebecca, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to talk briefly about budgeting apps because those have been super helpful for me just across the board with my finances, but especially with credit cards. There was a time when I had a lot of credit card debt and I swore that I would never get them again, but I've actually been able to pay it off. And one of the reasons is having a budgeting app, because you can link all of your different cards, all of your accounts. And so a credit card isn't kind of this mysterious black hole where you feel like you're getting free money and you're not really seeing it come out of your budget. So I just wanted to throw out that tip that's been really helpful for me.
And Rebecca, if you want to name a name, do you have a budgeting app that's worked for you?
Yeah, I use Mint just because it's free, but I think there's a lot of other good free ones that are out there.
Thanks for that, Rebecca. Laura, any thoughts on budgeting apps on the market now?
I agree completely with Rebecca. There are some very good tools out there. The one that I'm most familiar with is Mint.com, or if you're old school, Quicken.com is a good way to track everything. Even if you don't have an app, there are ways that you can track how you're spending your money, and just that awareness can really help. Excuse me. In the class that I teach at Marquette, on the first day of class, I have the students start tracking all of their spending, all of the money. What did they spend it on? How did they pay for it? How much did it cost? What was the date? And the most important thing was, why did they spend it? If everybody was going to Starbucks and they just went along and they bought something from Starbucks, you know, the reason would be I was hanging out with my friends and everybody else was doing it. If they went to Starbucks because they had no other way to get some food, they were starving and they needed lunch, that's a different reason. Then follow that for a while and then take a look at your reasons why you're spending your money. And that can help you, along with those budgeting apps, to figure out, what changes can I make? What do I feel comfortable sacrificing in order to reach my longer term goals? And that, you know, having a long term goal is also going to be incredibly important. If I'm just thinking, well, I'm making money, I'm spending money, you're just going to get yourself on that hamster wheel going round and round. But if you say, I want to work toward this item, I want to buy some new furniture, I want to get a down payment for a home, I want to buy a different car in 2 years, start taking those little steps now, and you're going to be able to reach those goals later on.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking about credit card debt with financial advisor and Marquette University instructor Laura Reinholz. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your philosophy towards credit cards? What do you use them for? What do you try not to use them for? How do you handle credit card debt? Do you need advice or suggestions on how to manage it? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Laura Reinholz, instructor at Marquette University's Business School and a financial advisor, with us today to help us manage credit card debt as borrowing goes up across the country, according to the New York Federal Reserve. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Did your monthly credit card bills get bigger over the course of this year? Have you made changes in your life at some point to bring down your use of credit cards? Get them under control. What questions, what experiences, what advice do you want to share? Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Milt is with us in Madison. Milt, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, hey, great topic. Laura, I have a couple points, and I'll just rattle them off, and you can respond. First, I don't think that there's any coincidence that with the rise in inflation, we have a rise in credit card debt. So people obviously are finding themselves stretched and are going to the credit card. And then the next thing I'd like to mention real quick is with the credit card, there is some tricks to managing your credit card and to knowing your billing cycle that I have found. Knowing what your billing cycle is, you can try and catch your payments that you need to make them after the last day of the billing cycle to get the extra 30 days or so of...
Milt, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. We touched on inflation briefly, Laura, but are there ways to sort of game the billing cycle, as Milt is suggesting? Are you there, Laura? We're talking to Laura Reinholz, instructor at Marquette University's Business School and financial advisor. I think I heard Laura in the background there. We'll see if we can get her back. In the meantime, you could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about credit or your experiences trying to get it under control. Maybe you used a budget app yourself to get your spending under control at some point in your life. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Looks like we don't have our guest back quite yet. Coming up in just a bit, we'll look at the end of the long-running Gableman probe of elections here in Wisconsin. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss appointed him to look at the 2020 presidential election outcome, how that election was managed, and then just recently ended that probe. We'll find out what was going on there and invite you to join in. In the meantime, we are looking to get our guest back as we talk about credit card debt. Let's see if we've got people with advice to share here while we wait for a guest. If there's questions, I can't really answer those, can I? How about Bruce in Cable? Let's bring on Bruce. There we are. Bruce, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to share the fact that I'm 78 years old, and when I was about my late 20s, early 30s, I was traveled for a pharmaceutical company, and I was a credit card abuser. I ran up a really high credit card bill, and I was going to never use credit cards again. I was going to cut them up, and my dad said, don't do that. He said, use credit as a tool. He said, pay it off at the end of the month, and no matter what, just don't carry a balance. And I did that. That's 50-some years ago, and 47 years ago. And I've never paid a nickel's interest or late charge on any credit card, and I run a business, so I average $3,000 a month, but it's always paid off no matter what.
Bruce, thanks a lot for sharing that story. I appreciate it. Laura, I think we've got you back now. I like that Bruce took advice from his dad. You know, it's not evil, but use it as a tool.
Absolutely. There actually can be some great benefits to using credit cards, and some of them are the convenience, because then you can just pay it off at the end of the month instead of having to write a lot of checks or use your debit card and try to track it as much. But there also can be some rewards. If you're constantly using your card, not constantly, but if you're using your card quite a bit, you can actually get more miles or rewards or different types of points or pennies back, which you can then use to help you help reach other goals. Or you can say, this is my funny money, I'm going to take it on vacation. There are some other benefits to credit card usage as well. If I'm buying something on a credit card and there's a problem with it, I may even have an extended warranty. So it's not all bad. If we are going to pay it off each month, it's going to be actually a really good way to track everything. The idea is to make sure that we do have the discipline in order to pay it off each month.
Thanks for that call. Joshua joins us now in Stevens Point. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I'm kind of running off what that gentleman just said. I got two kids, and I'm working class, and I have about $20,000 in available credit, but I put all my bills and everything on my credit cards every month on reoccurring. Because I get the rewards. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for so long and paying off every balance that I actually went on my honeymoon pretty much for free because of all the rewards. And I pay the balance off every month. Yeah, but it kind of gets me into trouble because then I'm kind of cash poor sometimes at the end of every month.
And oh,
I'm trying to reassess my budget right now, and I got a lot of help doing that. But I'm kind of going through a struggle because sometimes they can get away from me.
Gotcha. Joshua, thanks for sharing that, Laura. Any thoughts for Joshua?
First of all, congratulations on paying off your bill each month, and congratulations on paying for your honeymoon using the different points. So I think that's fantastic. It's good that you recognize that you feel cash poor at the end of the month. So that I would think you might want to take a step back and ask yourself, am I spending the way that I really want to be spending, or am I spending more? Are there ways that I can cut back so that I don't feel so cash poor at the end of the month? One other thing, too, you said that you have about $20,000 of available credit. one of the items that's important when looking at your credit score, which remember will help determine what your interest rates will be, is how much you're using of your available credit. So if you have a $20,000 available credit, if you're using $1,000 or $2,000 per month, you have about a 5 or 10% usage of your capacity. But if you're closer to $10,000 a month, for instance, then you're at about 50%. That's too high. So you want to think about how much you have compared to your overall credit that's available. And actually, going back to the previous call with Bruce, don't close down your credit cards. Just stop using them, because the history is another item that comes through on your credit report.
Joshua, thanks a lot for that call. We have just under a minute left. Laura, you want to leave us with a bit of inspiration for confronting a credit problem if we have one?
I think that identifying a challenge is the most important thing, and then thinking about what steps you can take for yourself, thinking about your long-term goals. What do you really want to do? And that's going to help you be able to get to what you need to do.
Laura, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope that everyone was able to get at least one or two little tidbits that they can use.
I imagine so. That's Laura Reinholz, instructor of practice at Marquette University's College of Business Administration, where she teaches the foundation of personal finance. She was with us today to look at a nationwide rise in credit card debt and how we can keep that debt under control. Coming up after the news, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss announced the end of his 2020 election probe led by former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman. We'll look back at the investigation and how it fits into wider efforts to contest the outcome of the presidential race here in Wisconsin and around the country. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we learn some of the adventurous history of TSR, the Wisconsin company behind the influential role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons. Now, GOP Assembly Speaker Robin Voss fired former state Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman last Friday, removing Gableman from his role as lead investigator on an election probe, searching for evidence of suspected election fraud back in 2020. Voss sent a letter to Gableman ending that probe just 1 week after Gableman and former President Trump publicly supported Voss's primary challenger. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think Voss is right to fire Gableman and put an end to the probe? Do you think that the year-plus effort was worth it, or was it, in your view, a waste of money? Do you want to know more about the 2020 elections, or is it time to turn the page? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Kathleen Dolan is Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. Kathy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Big picture, what, if anything, do you see coming out of this year-plus probe?
Well, I think the biggest thing that comes out of this year plus probe is keeping in the news the idea, without any evidence at all, that there might have been something wrong with the 2020 election here in Wisconsin or even nationally. We have had no evidence ever anywhere in the United States that there was anything compromised about the 2020 election. But we have spent 2 years talking about that. And as we know, when people hear things, they don't always hear all the details. And so there is reason for concern that some people in the United States and in Wisconsin come away with a sense that our elections are not free and fair, which we know they are. But too long a focus on the issue could lead some people to believe that there are problems when they shouldn't.
I want to go back to the beginning here with a listen to Assembly Speaker Voss announcing the Gableman investigation. This is at the Republican State Convention last year in the summer.
We are going to make a major announcement right now. Many of you know that the legislature has hired retired investigators who are beginning the process of looking into the shenanigans that happened during the course of the past year. Okay? Correct. But what if I told you that we were going to hire somebody who was a former district attorney, former circuit court judge who has actually seen what's happened, former member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, who is going to be the election coordinator with those three officers who are going to do it? What if I told you his name is Mike Gableman?
Now, just last week, Voss described Gableman as an embarrassment to Wisconsin. Can you talk about the politics of that, an announcement at the Republican State Convention of this appointment?
So, you know, let me just say before I answer, you, in playing that clip, gave more airtime to the concerns that I just raised. And one of the real dilemmas about these issues is the more time we spend talking about them, in some ways, the less able we are to refute them and to bring forward the truth. But the bookends of this probe, Speaker Voss announcing it at the Republican State Convention last year, it was very clear at the time, and we all know that in the intervening years since, that he did that at the behest of former President Trump. It was done for political reasons. It was done after Speaker Voss resisted doing exactly what he did for some period of time. And then when you fast forward to the end of the process, we know that the reason he did away with the investigation was political as well, because Gableman had turned on him in supporting Speaker Voss's primary challenger. Former President Trump had continued to be very critical and had also supported Adam Steen. And so Speaker Voss was retaliating from a political perspective. It is unlikely that Speaker Voss would say to us that he was committed to the investigation of the election because he dismissed it with a wave of a hand. So it was born in politics and it died in politics, and that is not to the betterment of the people of Wisconsin.
Talking to Kathleen Dolan from UW-Milwaukee, looking at the end of the Republican-appointed Gableman probe of Wisconsin's 2020 elections. You could join in with your reactions, your thoughts on this whole process at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Nate is with us in Madison. Nate, hi.
Thank you. I couldn't agree with the speaker more. This is a pure political fiasco, and the sad thing is, this is direct taxpayer money being paid for a political adventure. Like the speaker said, it was initiated because of pressure from the former president, who now is in a ton of legal trouble, which says something about who he was. And it's continuing with a political closure because now it's become unpalatable to Speaker Voss, who is the one who initiated it. So the answer, folks, is throw these bums out. These Republicans who spend our money for political purposes. There you go.
Nate, thanks for the call. Kathy, Nate sees a waste of money as well as time here. Are there, do you think, consequences for people who have raised these questions about the 2020 elections, who've put this kind of money into it in Wisconsin or elsewhere?
Well, you know, unfortunately, as Nate suggests, you know, there are sort of broader problems here. You know, we could ask Speaker Voss if he has complete confidence in the primary election in which he just stood. He won that election, and so, of course, he's comfortable with the results. A significant problem here is people questioning elections when and only when they don't like the results. So as we watch around the country, we have seen sort of a mixed bag of results. We have seen election deniers win in some places. We have seen some election deniers lose. From the Republican Party's perspective, it may be unfortunate that more of them have won than not. But we are going through elections currently, and what we should be concerned about is how people approach the 2022 elections this fall.
Now, there have been kind of two different threads of criticism. As you mentioned, claims of voter fraud, it just wasn't there. I think many, many findings have found no fraud or very limited single-digit numbers. There's been some criticism about some decisions that were kind of ambiguous in law, like drop boxes, for example. State law didn't specifically ban them, didn't specifically outlaw them. The state Supreme Court has weighed in now and said, yeah, no more ballot boxes. Do you think it is worth revisiting some of those procedure things that sometimes in state law is left with a little gray area?
So, you know, here's a place where my good friend federalism comes in, right? Federalism is the relationship between the national and the state governments in the United States. And federalism is a principle that allows states an enormous amount of control over many things, in this example, elections. The federal government sets a few standards for how states have to behave around elections and then leaves most of those things to states to decide, and much to localities. So drop boxes became a huge deal here in Wisconsin because some people believed that in the context of a global pandemic, it didn't make sense to give people a safer way to vote. But the issue is drop boxes have been used here in Wisconsin for times before the pandemic. They're used around the country routinely, and they are largely successful. So one of the problems we have is, as you say, state law does not prohibit, but does not also explicitly empower the use of drop boxes. And so those judgments were left to election officials. State law would help elections officials if it was clear on matters. But what we as a people need to be able to feel confident about is that the decisions that are made about how elections should be carried out are done without political consideration, because a particular party holds the legislature now, and they could write election laws that benefit them. But then at some point down the road, things can change. And so I think the voters and the people of the state need to feel confident that the laws are being made in the best interest of the people, not one of the political parties.
We're talking to Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee. Kathy's joining us to talk about the end of the Republican-led investigation into Wisconsin's 2020 presidential elections. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on that investigation? Are you glad it's over? Were there things you were still hoping to hear about? Do you feel confident in general that our elections are pretty well run in Wisconsin? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, looking at the end of the Wisconsin Republican-led investigation into the 2020 presidential election. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for taking the time out of the show with the show to talk about this subject. I just wanted to, agree to echo the sentiments that the guest and the previous caller that I already shared. From the beginning, I think this whole investigation has been pretty much the definition of a farce. I mean, it was started based on no real substantial evidence of any kind, and was continued, in much the same way. And much like the previous caller said, it would be comical if it weren't such a waste of Wisconsin taxpayer money. So that's all. Thank you.
Michael, thanks for that call. Kathy, given this kind of sustained messaging about, claims of fraud in the election, do you see ways for to remind people how elections work to counter claim those claims?
Well, that is an important point, because most people really don't have any idea how elections work. And generally, usually they don't really need to understand. elections here in Wisconsin are, you know, quite well administered and usually go very, very smoothly. So basic things. So during the 2020 election, one of the things that was frustrating to me, and I tend to know more about these things because of what I do for a living, but here in Wisconsin, our law states that absentee ballots cannot be counted before election day. Again, that's one of those things that's done differently in other states. And so if you think about the concerns that the former president raised about the returns in Wisconsin, because it took a long time for Milwaukee to count all of its votes and they tend to come in later. Clerks around the state had asked the legislature to change the law to allow them to start processing absentee ballots ahead of election day. If the legislature had given the clerks that go ahead, we wouldn't have had the concerns, and I'm making bunny ears when I say concerns, that people raised about the returns in Milwaukee particularly. The legislature simply refused to do that. So there are ways in which the people of the state don't know how and when and under what circumstances things are being processed. And perhaps if we were more transparent and let people know that here are the rules, here are how clerks work, here are the ways in which things are reported, it might help individuals understand that there isn't a problem and that there is, you know, good evidence of that. But again, you know, we can look to other states to how they administer their elections, and there's very, 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 very little election fraud anywhere in the United States. And there are places that do things very differently than Wisconsin does with much success. And so we could even look to other states for successful ways of administering things.
Thanks for the call. Richard joins us now in Cambridge. Richard, hi.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. First of all, what she said is absolutely right. The one thing the legislature could have fixed, they didn't. On the general topic of our election safe, I'm 71 years old, a lifelong resident of Wisconsin, and we've never had any problems with our elections ever. Everything that they brought up was just to make problems, raise doubts based on no proof. The reason I called was this question. Can't we taxpayers get our money back from this bogus investigation? And who would do that? Does it need to be a citizen who takes this to court, or is this something Josh Call could do? And that's it for me. Thank you very much.
Richard, thanks for the call. I know there are some questions at this point over how some of the lawsuits will be paid for related to open records, but I'm guessing, Kathy, there's probably not a mechanism to claw back the money spent for the most part.
You know, that is well beyond my area of expertise, and I wouldn't want to put out anything about that. I do know that people would like to see the money reimbursed, but I just don't know if a mechanism exists or if Speaker Voss has the power to encumber that money as he chooses.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Kathleen Dolan from UW-Milwaukee, political scientist there, looking at the end of the Gableman probe into Wisconsin's elections. What came out of that, what didn't come out of it, how it fits into wider efforts to call it a question, elections in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Kathy, I know a concern about this story here in Wisconsin and in so many other countries is, as our caller just said, you know, this is being an effort to create doubt about our elections, to allow election results to be overturned at some later stage, like was an attempt to happen on January 6th, trying to send things back to state legislatures. Do you worry that this is basically setting up a pretext for overturning election at some stage in the game?
Yes, I think those concerns are valid. I think that what happened after the 2020 election, culminating in January 6th and since January 6th, is part of a concerted playbook about laying a base for even as early as 2024. As I said a minute ago, that there are some Republicans around the country who are being elected as election deniers. And in four states, we have very rabid election deniers who have won Republican primaries to serve as Secretary of State. In most states, secretaries of state are the people who administer elections. And so if this atmosphere over the last couple of years helps to put in place people who want to deny the way elections are run, then that puts power into the hands of the wrong people in 2024. We have heard people here in Wisconsin, we hear the Republican candidate for governor say, well, you know, I'm not sure what happened. We'll have to take a look. I don't feel comfortable in 2024 with knowing that there are people in power who might want to do things against the rules. So, yes, I do believe that we are headed for a bigger problem in 2024.
It's kind of a whack-a-mole game in a lot of ways with all the different theories, claims of fraud out there. We've had a couple of callers reference the Dinesh D'Souza film, 2000 Mules, claiming to have evidence about ballot box fraud. We saw former Attorney General Bill Barr debunk that in the January 6th hearings. What do you think about this, just the variety of theories out there and how hard it is to catch up with all of them?
Well, that is unfortunately a larger problem of the human psyche, right? I mean, we know at its most basic that it's a lot easier for people to keep the information they hear first than it is for them to hear the refutation. And so as former President Trump played, you know, very well over his time, you say words and people hear those words and believe them. People are much less likely to take evidence against their own beliefs, right? People's beliefs support what they believe to be true, and they take information that supports those beliefs, and they tend to reject information that would stand in opposition to those beliefs. So convincing people who hold election-denying theories that they are wrong is extraordinarily difficult. And as you say, it is particularly difficult because there are so many things that people have decided went wrong, and there are so many threads and strands. And that's part of my pessimism about 2024, because it is literally impossible to get people to change their worldviews when they're so dug in on those conspiracy theories.
Are there institutional changes you see that we need to help make sure that we don't have an effort to overturn an election result actually succeed?
Well, the bill that's working its way through Congress right now to change some of the unclear pieces of the Electoral Count Act. You know, you say you use the example of the Wisconsin law having a lack of clarity here around ballot boxes. Part of the challenge in 2020 was that the system, the Electoral Count Act and the system of counting Electoral College votes was not as crystal clear and did not limit problems in a way that it could have. And so if the Senate is able to strengthen that law and to make the procedures clearer, that could go a good way to helping to protect the system in 2024.
In just our last minute, Kathy, what are you watching for next on these election-related integrity issues?
I'm interested in continuing to look. So after 2020, one of the things that happened is that many states changed their laws to tighten up the opportunities for people to vote. In 17 states that the Republicans hold the legislature, they constricted the right to vote by making it more difficult for people to do so. And they did it based on these supposed arguments about election fraud. I'm watching in 2022 how some of those new laws will affect the opportunities for people to vote, you know, whether it's decreasing the number of polling places in certain areas or making laws about times. You know, we saw Georgia pass a law that makes it illegal to give water to somebody waiting in line at a polling place. So there's been a real micromanagement in many states in the last 2 years to really tighten up laws. And if there is no evidence, these laws are being tightened for the wrong reasons, most of which are political. So I'm interested in seeing how these new laws take effect and play out in the 2022 midterms.
Kathy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
That was Kathy Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. She joined us to talk about Michael Gabelman's investigation into election fraud, which has come to an end now after Robin Voss fired him last Friday. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a look at Lord of the Rings archives at Marquette University. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. One of the first challenges of parenting is coming up with names for kids. And it sometimes turns out that parents have namers remorse and go back and change the name early on. So what names do parents regret the most? As reported in the Washington Post, info from the Social Security Administration shows the most common names that are changed and the most common names they're changed to. The top two on each side over the most recent four-year period on record, the most common names gotten rid of are Issac, I-S-S-A-C, and Chole. C-H-O-L-E. What? The most common names changed, too, are Isaac, I-S-A-A-C, and, not Chole, Chloe, C-H-L-O-E. Yes, the top changes appear to be really common spelling mistakes. Apart from spelling errors, people are moving away from Aiden, Connor, and Elliot and switching to names like Sebastian, William, and Olivia. If you're in the market for a good name, Robert, always ready for a comeback. Get ahead of the curve. What's in a name? This is Central Time.